This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be with you all. Good to see some familiar faces here and some people that I don't know. This topic, Essentials of Staff Care, comes out of a couple years of being involved in ministry and seeing and experiencing some of the, I'm going to call them the tragedies of life, the challenges that ordinary people face in ministry, and the idea that maybe they're not so different from the regular tragedies of life that people face who are not involved in full-time ministry. We're going to be mostly looking at ideas, and the passion is that the people that are involved in the work of ministry are cared for in meaningful ways. And I think a lot of that responsibility rests on mission administration, on mission boards, and on supporting churches. And it starts, though, with believing the right things about missionaries. Some of our content this morning focuses a lot on leadership, and I think we need to acknowledge that the role of organizational leadership, whether it's board or administration or church, it's fraught with responsibility, and there's just no way to get out of that or to minimize it or to pretend it isn't so. So we're just going to acknowledge that right up front, that organizational leadership has a unique job to look after those who are entrusted to them. You have your handouts. These slides and the handouts are exactly the same. There's some room for you to take notes. I'll be talking a bit this morning, and then I'd like to open it for a Q&A. And maybe this can turn into some discussion and some idea sharing on things that you've found that work or things that you've found that don't work. Romans 16, verse 1 and 2, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, who is a servant of the church, which is at Centria. I don't know where that is. Does anybody know where that is? Somewhere in the Middle East, I imagine. But here's this lady who is a servant of the church. I like how Paul characterizes her. I think that is what most missionaries see themselves as. They see themselves as a servant of the church. I think that most people involved in Christian ministry think they're accountable to the church. They think they're a part of the church. I just came out of a great session that Dennis Yoder did on the kingdom of God and how there's room for everybody in it and everybody has a role in it. And I think that's how the mindset of most missionaries, whether they are a young person going on a one-week missions trip or whether they're, you know, been at it for 50 years, they see themselves as a servant of the church, a servant of Christ and his church. And it's important that we understand the heart of the average missionary, the average worker. A number of months ago, I was talking with a young person who was working at Beaver Lake Camp, and there was some tough stuff going on, and we've had tough sledding, you know, at times. Sometimes we've had really nice sledding too, but tough sledding, you know, when things aren't going the way you wish they were. And this young person said, "Norm, you need to remember that every one of us that's serving here did not come here to rip off Northern Youth Programs. We came to serve, and it's the heart of a servant." It was so evident, it was so clear, and I knew she wasn't lying. I knew she was right. And I also knew that I had somehow failed her. And she somehow believed that I didn't believe she was there to serve. And so who is a servant of the church? These young people that we call to ministry, that we say, "Hey, you should go to," you know, name the spot, and we get them excited about going. they're God's most precious gift to us. And so how do we care about them? And do we care about them? That's often a question that arises. So back to these verses. Phoebe, a servant of the church, it says that you receive her in the Lord in a worthy in a manner worthy of the saints. I get the picture of a young person who's a little lost in the world and looking to find their way, and they're looking to get to where they want to go. They're not quite sure where they want to go, so they're going to some place that's unfamiliar. And that was me in 2006 when I went to Northern Youth Programs as a young married man with two little girls. I wasn't sure where I was going, and I sure didn't know what I was getting into. Not a bit. But in a ministry organization, somewhere on the team, there needs to be somebody that says, welcome to the team. You're here because you're the right person. We don't know you yet, but we know you're the right person because you've come here. To be received as a person that is worthy of the saints means you're not viewed with suspicion. You're not viewed as a problem. You're not viewed as a troublemaker. You're viewed as a saint. That means when you see that young person come into your organization, you say, ah, here's another Phoebe. Here's another Lydia. Here's another Peter. Boy, those Peters drive you nuts. But man, so glad they're here. Like they jump out of boats to pretend to walk on water, and then they sink, and God's got to save them. But they're Peters. I think that the starting point in our relationship with staff needs to be clearer that we see the incoming people as saints. That's important. The last part of the verse, and that you help her in whatever matter she may have need of you. Okay? We need to acknowledge that those in leadership, those in administration, have a way of helping those that are coming in, because those that are coming in also have needs. Make sense? And for she herself has also been a helper of many and of myself as well. So you're recognizing that the person that's coming in to the organization has gifts. They have been helpful. They are saints. They are good people that God has called to his work. They are all of that, hero material. And they have needs. Both can be true. It's not one or the other. It's not like a person is either hopelessly and helplessly broken and completely in need of 100% care, and neither are they quite independent heroes that need nothing. Sometimes we're both incredibly heroic and incredibly capable and incredibly needy all at the same time. Okay? So in ministry organizations, 70% of the people that are called to ministry think it is a life calling. And 70% of those that go, not those that are asked, but those that actually get to the field, 70% who go thinking it is a life calling quit within 2 years, and 90% within 5 years. So I love REACH and that it is a great recruiting program. Like I was talking to a young person last night. He's serving with NYP right now. His name is Walt, and he's here. And last night he told me, he says, I'm so glad that I'm already at NYP, because if I was here at REACH and I wasn't somewhere, I would feel like maybe I'm not quite living up to what I should be. And so those of you that are not, like, the guilt is gone, the pressure is off. Don't think you should be guilted into ministry. But if God has called you into ministry, you should respond in obedience. However, when you enter ministry thinking that this is what God has called me to, you're not done being a needy person, and you need others around you to support you to sustain it. So why are these statistics so tragic? That 70% of the people who think it is a life calling leave. They quit. Often there's this idea, well, God is calling me to something else. Well, that's nice. At least God's still calling people. but now let's think about what it takes to actually get a person to frontline ministry. They have a desire. They have a calling. They have vision. They have purpose. They have giftings. They went through an application process. They were accepted. They made it through basic training, and that's not easy. I mean, if your basic training is easy, then think about that. But basic training should be really hard, because if it's not, then something harder will come that will make them leave. So the other component here is that these people often have some kind of technical skill that drew them, that where they said, hey, I could be that. I could be a cook. I could be a secretary. I could be a mechanic. I'm not sure I can be a youth worker, but maybe, like, I've seen so many mechanics become youth workers and maintenance people become youth workers and secretaries become youth workers. They just didn't believe they could, but it just happens, okay? They have those skills. They develop some level of cultural awareness. And that cultural awareness is a huge thing in some organizations, some organizations not. But some kinds of cultural awareness are really difficult to get. And think about the huge gift that it is once you have it. It's unbelievable. It's irreplaceable. I was talking with a couple of missionaries, and they talked about the experienced person, and he had been there for like 6 months. I was going, oh. The experienced person had been there 6 months. I shudder and I cry for the nationals. Because the nationals, they see right through it, and they're going, ah, here comes another one. They're not saying it. That's what they're thinking. Like, we need long-term missionaries who know culture, and if we don't care for our people, we will never get that. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. In cross-cultural settings, there's, like I said, your local homeless shelter, it might not be an issue at all. A church plant, some ministries, it doesn't matter. But, man, some it really does. Okay, the most common reason for leaving the field is relationship problems and burnout. Within relationship problems, a lot of it ends up being marriage problems. That's a real tragedy. Or family problems. It's a real tragedy. I don't know what you think of this last statement. Faith-based organizations and healthcare organizations are among the most toxic workplaces, according to some surveys. Mm-hmm. Not the military, not the oil field, not the trailer factories of northern Indiana, which is where I grew up. Those aren't the most toxic places, but healthcare organizations and faith-based organizations. Mm-hmm. These are according to some surveys that have been done. I don't know that we Anabaptist, conservative Anabaptist organizations are exempt. And the reason I don't know that we're exempt is I have lived some of it. And some of you know I have lived some of that, and we were in this together. And toxicity in an organization becomes like a cancer that just erodes morale, and it causes people to say, you know what, I don't care. They don't care about me. I don't care either. I'm done. Like, I can go get beat up somewhere where the pay's better, you know. So this is not good, okay? And if you thought I would come here and just pat our organizations on the back and say we're doing great, maybe some of us are. Some of us are trying, and maybe some of us haven't even thought about it. So I hope this seminar is kind of to create awareness around the need for staff care. A blog, Reflections of a Millennial Doctor, maybe... We actually need to start listening to millennials. Just a thought. This blog is worth reading, but this statement on this blog is a quote, fear-based leadership. He's talking about a doctor who is in a healthcare system. He just come through residency, and I think like 3 years in, he's done. He's leaving healthcare. He paid all the bills, but he's not sticking around to collect on the results of his investment. And I think that millennials often get criticized for really not having the courage and the stick-to-itiveness or the endurance to make it through hardships. Maybe that's true, but maybe millennials are just telling us older geezers, what's wrong with us? And maybe we should listen a little bit. Just a thought. This is what this guy is saying. He said, fear-based leadership, that's a big part of it. Seeing people as cogs in a machine to be spent in any way deemed useful to the organization with no concern for the actual person. There will always be another you. Don't forget, you're easily replaceable. I'd say this is the mindset of too many Christian ministries. Now, in conservative Anabaptist missions, the whole movement started in some ways with this whole idea of voluntary service, and it's a great idea. Voluntary service led to the arise of short-term programs, and it often, even in northwestern Ontario where we live, it was kind of as a result of draft dodging. It was a form of it. It was a form of saying, you know, I can go do VS so that I don't have to go to the Army. I mean, one of my mentors and friends, Amos Ash, that's what he says. He says, I came to northwestern Ontario to avoid the draft. Well, great, but it's a very short-term mentality, and it's this idea of going for a year or two and then be done. I've done my term of service. And so that factor has led itself somewhat to this idea of a term of service, and doing a term and getting it over with has facilitated some poor administrative practices that kind of reinforce it. Now we need short-termers, and we need people to be cogs on the wheel, and we need to keep this wheel going. Like, we need more people to burn up. And I would like to present the idea that maybe we need to take care of the people we have and keep them going and not burn them up and use them well and treat them well and serve them well. And their investment, I think, will produce dividends of useful ministry. It's just a thought. So what is your organization's most important asset? I'd like you to rank the following. Whatever your organization ministry you're involved in, is it your reputation? Is it your money? Is it your staff? Is it your godliness? Is it your goodness? It's really important that we get this right. You know, Jesus boiled down the laws of being in the kingdom of God to two things. He said, love God, and he said, love your fellow man. And those are the two greatest commandments. Loving God kind of discards things like reputation and money. I'm not saying those are not important. They are. But they're pretty small compared to our godliness. And people start to question our godliness, and we should question our godliness, when our love for our fellow man is not what it should be. So the measure of our godliness is actually lived out in our human relationships. I think this is just how people operate. It's how God designed us to be. So if we can focus on God, number one, live it out in our relationships with our fellow man, maybe that's the solution. And that sounds like rocket science, doesn't it, Joel? It isn't. The motivation and the passion for this is to get the foundations maybe closer to right than what they might be when we don't talk about it. How many of you have been in missions at all? Okay, most of you. I'd like to talk about some assumptions I had as a new staff person coming into an organization. These are assumptions. One thing I assumed is that the organization has my best interests at heart. I just believed it. Like, people love me, man. Of course they do, because they're good. I believed it. And I figured if it's good for me, it'll be good for the organization. I just believed it. I believe that organization would take care of me when it going gets tough. I believed it. I thought, that's just how people are, aren't they? Surely. Of course everybody is that way. Everybody loves their neighbor and helps their neighbor, don't they? I believe that organizations will be good, kind, and honest. I believed it. Surely an organization would never misrepresent things to their staff or to the rest of the world. Surely an organization would never do that. I couldn't believe anybody would. These are missionaries, after all. Like, these are the superheroes of the faith, aren't they? And isn't that what I'm aspiring to be? I always thought an organization would care more about its staff than it would about itself. And if push came to shove, the staff would win. The staff would come out ahead. The staff would be treated with the utmost dignity, and the organization would maybe disappear into the journals of history. But the staff, the individuals, the humans, those that walk around on two legs, would be the preserved and cared for and protected ones. I always thought that. These are assumptions I had coming into a ministry organization. I thought God would always bless people for their service. I believed that. And I always thought that God would always protect us from all evil, and he would preserve us in the face of danger and hardship. I believed that God would always punish the wicked. And by now you might be thinking, there is one cynical, bitter, burned out, toxic person. Because if I'm saying I used to believe this and I don't believe this anymore, what have I got to say? I'm used up. The system has destroyed me. I've been a cog in the wheel, and the wheel has turned, and it should just spit me back out before I destroy the wheel. That could be an assumption you make right now. You could believe that. You can talk to our board chairman, Phil Hirschberger, back there's my buddy. You can talk to him about that afterwards. If you think that's what you're getting here, just say it to him or to me. You see, I still believe some of these things can be true. I believe these things will be true as people make them true. I believe these things should be true, but I don't believe that these things are automatically assumed to be true. Does that make sense? You can have it this way. It isn't guaranteed to be this way. Incoming staff should be told that there will be days of tough sledding. There'll be days when you feel like you're sledding on a gravel driveway. There will be days when everything goes wrong and then somebody doesn't appreciate you. Staff need to know that. Like I said, training needs to be tough. If training isn't tough, it's pretty hard for sheltered, protected, wealthy Mennonite youth to understand that life is hard. Okay? So we need to be clear on the... we need to deal with assumptions. However, it can be true that an organization will be good, kind, and honest. It can be true that an organization will put staff ahead of its reputation or its money or its whatever. It can be true. But it doesn't necessarily happen automatically. The truth be told, it is really easy to put programs and purpose ahead of people. Whatever your organization's mission and vision is, I'm sure it's good. I know it's good. You wouldn't be here. If your mission would be to, you know, kill, steal, and destroy, you would not be at Reach. If your mission is to bring healing and hope and the gospel and change people's lives for good, that's probably why you're here. So I'm sure it's a good mission. And it can be put ahead of the humans, the people, just like you and me, that we recruit, that we train, that we orient, that we hire, that we say, this is going to be great. We need you. It's easy to put that program and purpose ahead of that person and forget that that person, too, has a mom and a dad maybe some siblings, maybe some baggage, maybe some issues, maybe some brokenness, maybe some things that they shouldn't be doing that they've done, and forget that they too have needs, but they also have gifts. And they're there. We hire for their gifts, but folks, expect the needs too. They come with it. I can't separate the needy norm from the hero norm. It just kind of all comes in one box. Is that right, Phil? Yeah. It's good. We just had an evaluation the other day, and he tells me what some of my needs are. It's good. It's easy to value the organization and its identity over the individuals that make it successful. An organization takes on its own reputation. It takes on its own identity. It gets its own branding. It gets its own story that it tells itself. And an organization takes on a life of its own. It's not just the leaders or the board, but an organization kind of becomes this thing. Like when you say D&I, you think something, right? If you're around it. When you say Olive Branch, you think something. When you say Northern Youth Programs, you say Beaver Lake Camp. Something comes to your mind, and it's not just the individuals. It's more than that. And when whatever is more than the individuals really starts to set the agenda, that organizational identity, that organizational storyline, like we do these good things, when that storyline becomes to take precedent over the individuals and we say, well, we can't take care of this person because, well, that would destroy our organization's reputation, well, something's wrong if that's what's going on. In administration, we work with staff. Boards work with staff. Staff have needs, and staff are awesome people. Both, remember I said both are true. It is easy when staff with their needs come to us with their needs. It is easy for us to start seeing the staff person as the problem. Like if we could just get rid of so-and-so, then everything would be fine around here. Why? Because that way the wheel would still keep turning and the organization would still be able to be successful at what it's doing. If we just got rid of these people, it's not a good way of thinking, guys. It's toxic. Even the military doesn't do that, but faith-based organizations do that, and it's not right. And if our organization's doing that, we need to repent, we need to change, and we need to figure out a better way. It is easy to forget the first and second commandment and see the organization. It boils down to the basics. Now let's talk about some practical aspects here. Typical needs that everyone has, I don't care if you live in Lancaster County in the land of milk and honey, as it's called, or if you live in, I don't know, like Siberia or northern Canada or someplace. What did I do? We're not going to get hung up on that too much. It's not very happy. So you got your handouts. It's fine. Yeah, I'll be good. You got your handouts. This is somewhere on page. Typical needs that everyone has. The bottom of the third page. Oh, what a deal. Thanks, Tony. Just need an IT guy in the room and the computer problems go away. Everybody has family needs. I don't really care where you live. Your family has needs. I think that the needs change a lot throughout the course of life. And what a young married couple can do is quite different from what a middle-aged couple can do, which is quite different what an older couple can do, maybe somebody in their 60s, and what's different from what somebody in their 80s can do. There's a lot of books that have been written about this, about stages of life. I'd recommend one called Consider Your Calling. Consider Your Calling. I forget the author. Just Google it. You'll find it. Stages of life. Changes our needs. It also changes what we have to offer. One thing with that is if you're in an organization for an extended period of time, the needs you have and the talents you have change with that amount of time. And sometimes an organization brings somebody in because they're the perfect IT guy, but they don't recognize he's becoming the perfect administrator. You know, that's just how it works. It changes. With that, the needs change. Whatever you need for the care of your family, living in, I'm going to say Lancaster County because that's where we are. I grew up in Goshen, Indiana. It's similar and different. I have needs. I needed a church. I needed a school for my children. My children weren't in school by the time when we were there because they were too young, but I would have had those needs. I would have needed an income. I had an income when I was there. I needed a church community. I needed a broader community who was not a part of my church. Like, I needed a place to go to Walmart, right? Like, some of you are maybe in missions where there is no Walmart, but there's something that takes the place of whatever Walmart offers. And we have those needs, and sometimes organizations get in their heads, well, they're missionaries, they should know how to do without. And I have a cousin who's telling me that, you know, he looks at people that cut their own firewood, and he's like, you know what, I can make more money by working 10 extra hours every Saturday at my place of business. I can make more money there than I can save by cutting my own firewood. And he's like, oh, I said, yeah, but I cut my own firewood. And he's like, well, yeah, you should. You're a missionary. And he just puts it out like that. And he's right, you know, because I don't get paid by the hour, right? So but you should, because your missionary concept, though, sometimes really crawls into churches, and they look at missionaries as, well, they live like the scum of the earth, man. That's all they need. Well, the truth is their needs are just the same as anybody else's. And even if their needs aren't the same, I bet you if you got to it, their desires would be the same. And probably every now and then, they would like to buy an ice cream cone for their children. Just a thought. My pastor told me once, was at a commissioning at church, he says, Norm, don't forget, every now and then, buy your children a Dr. Pepper when you go to the store. You know? Don't forget the little things to take care of your children. And it kind of represents an attitude that we have needs for even sometimes little nice things. And that doesn't cost $1 million. And it's simple, and it's an acknowledgement of the little things that it speaks of an attitude. So if you have these needs living here, what might the needs be elsewhere? Pretty much everybody at some point in their life will face some kind of crisis. Either it's a physical crisis, an emotional crisis, relational crisis, mental illness, burnout, moral dilemmas. Our missions are scattered with these, and so are our home communities. So these are normal crises, but yet they're very much a crisis, and it requires very much a special set of care. Now, the unique things about mission settings is that in the real world of ministry settings, that there's a pressure to do more with less and to be better than the rest. That is a really huge pressure that missionaries face. Like, God didn't call you to missions to go be a sorry failure that just doesn't get anything done right. God didn't call you that. And you know that. And you know you need to give your best. And one thing that makes you think that you need to give your best is you know that somebody else is paying the bills. And if you're a responsible person that works for a living and you transition into missions and you know somebody else is being a responsible person and they're giving 10% into the church offering bucket and that's financing your daily activities, you know, your rice and beans and that occasional Dr. Pepper, you know that there is a requirement for stewardship and to do more with less. It just kind of comes with the territory. Now let's add to that. In real-world missionary settings, people are often isolated from normal surroundings and support systems. I was talking the other day, we were talking about picking blueberries. We were down at Phil's place, and up north we pick blueberries. They're little bitty berries, and we fill our freezers with them, and they're really good. And it takes a long time to clean them. Like, you got to pick the green ones from the blue ones, and you got to get the leaves and the little sticks out of them, the bugs and stuff. So it takes a lot of work. And we're talking with Phil and Janelle. We're like, you know what? If there'd be wild blueberries in Lancaster County, I bet you there'd be some Amish place that you could take your buckets of blueberries to, and they'd have a machine that would clean your blueberries. And I was like, yeah, that's how it would be. Well, where we live in northwestern Ontario, there isn't a machine like that. And so we have children. And anyhow, not really. But I want you to get the understanding that like northern Ontario is not very remote. It's not, I mean, it's part of Canada. It's theoretically a civilized country, and theoretically it's sophisticated. But when you're away from what most of the things that we grew up with, when those things are gone, you feel a certain sense of helplessness or loneliness. You're also tasked with integrating into a new culture and value system. What's important here might not have been important there. And what was important there is now no longer important here. There's also a real element of spiritual attack and spiritual warfare that you face when you know that you're walking in enemy territory. And the enemy territory is not the enemy of, it's not the people you're there to reach. They're not the enemy. But it's the battle that's going on in the heavenlies, and it's for your soul, and it's for the souls of the people that you care about. Another thing in a foreign setting is that many things are not in our control. The things that you know that you can do here because you can just do it, it's just not necessarily that way. And now let's add to that that often our support systems give us pat answers. And, well, you could just this, and you could just that. And the pat answers are actually more annoying than helpful. And that's another pressure that missionaries face. So what is your organization, what is its plan for its care of the normal needs? If you can't care for the normal needs, how can you be prepared for the abnormal situations? If you don't care for the normal situations, how can you be prepared for the abnormal situations? Most crises events are actually not that crazy. What they are is their accumulation of a bunch of normal and predictable things. Most. Some crises are not. But many crises, there's a whole lead-up chain to that major crisis. And if the little things ahead of that are routinely discarded, that this doesn't matter, this doesn't matter, our communication doesn't matter, our pay system doesn't matter, our emotional and spiritual support care system doesn't matter. If all of those little care systems don't matter, then at some point there'll be a breaking point and someone is going to go down through the bridge and into the river. Staff tend to judge their organization based on its ability to provide care over a long-term relationship. And that is just how I've experienced it. I don't know if this is true in every organization, but I feel like most of the critiquing that I have gotten from staff, both former and current, is whether or not we can provide care over a long-term relationship. Can we provide for the spiritual needs? Can we provide for the emotional needs? Can we provide for the family needs? Can we provide for the financial needs? Those are kind of ordinary big things that you kind of get taken care of all by yourself in an environment like this, because you know where you're going to church. You know who your pastor is. You know where you're going to work, how much it's going to get paid. You know where you're going to get your food. It's kind of built into the community. Well, in a foreign setting, you need to come up with something new on most of those fronts. Something needs to replace it, or the staff person will wither. Now, the foundations of staff care is the first one is humility. There is no replacement for leadership that knows it can make mistakes. We can make mistakes. We can make big mistakes. We can not see big things. And my life is a story of seeing and making many mistakes. The question is, do we have a learning attitude? if we don't have a learning attitude, then we can't change from the mistakes we've made. The second one is a leadership that is more interested in serving the staff than in the staff serving the organization. It's as simple as that. Do people know you care? Or do they want you to care about the work, but you're not going to care about them? This third one has been a real big one for me the last several years, leadership that sees its own needs realistically. I thought things were going really good at Northern Youth Programs in 2019, and then I was going wide open, and I didn't see what I didn't see. I just saw how awesome it was, and I was doing what I wanted to do, and I loved it. But I was missing a lot of people along the way because I wasn't looking at what they needed. And I was looking at my successes. And at some point, I ended up in the hospital. I was done for. And if we as leaders don't see our own needs, we just run ourselves ragged, and we run those around us ragged because if we don't care even about ourselves, how can we convince anybody else we care about them? It doesn't work. We just see our own limitations. And so this is about humility. And if we as leaders aren't willing to embrace a humble path and say, you know, I have needs too, and I can't do everything, if we can't do that, then we're going to hurt more people. Leadership that knows when it's successful. This is why performance reviews are really important. If we don't know that we're successful, then we're generally going to keep trying to reach for something that is unattainable and will hurt people. We need divine call and divine security, and we need brothers around us that point us and say, yeah, you're getting it right, or you're not. If that's not happening, we're done. Compassion. Leaders that know that they can make good things happen in the lives of staff. It is so rewarding to help and to do something, and somebody else's life is better as a result of it. That is awesome. Get a vision for that in leadership, and good things happen. When we feel like a staff member is under stress, we have to be sensitive enough to see it. I'd like to skip forward to some practical aspects. There's some significant different management strategies for long-term versus short-term staff. What a volunteer can do for a week, a family can't do for 20 years. It's just how it is. And you got to know the difference. And you got to have a complete different strategy for how to take care of it. And that is true for financial, spiritual, and relationship supports. We also need to have clear communication on expectations when recruiting. I'm kind of tired of the whole storyline. You should come to missions. It will be great. I'm just sick of it. Because it's just not true, okay? You should come to missions. It's going to be war. That's true. And it's what the Bible actually says. Oh, and you can help fight. And then when there's changes, there needs to be clear communication on that. So I'd like to just shut this down and stop talking for a bit. Is there any comments or questions anybody has?
Why don't you make some comments about equipping and empowering versus extracting.
That's the difference between equipping and empowering versus extracting. So staff training is all about making good people better. And when you make good people better, they just do more good things. Versus saying, oh, this person could do this, and we put them in a spot where they can do it, but then when they can't, we're kind of done with them. That's extracting. Is that what you had in mind? You know all about this.
Well, you just look at the scriptural example of Saul and David and how Saul was an extractor. He wanted to use up what David brought to the table, right? Mm-hmm. He took the talents that David had, and he tried to use David up for himself.
Yeah.
And you look at an example of Jesus and the way he equipped or empowered his disciples. And, I don't know, somewhere embedded in those stories and in those relationships, we can, I think, find some pretty powerful realities of what it looks like. And just for me, just keeping those words in mind, mm-hmm. How do I equip and empower versus extract? And I've experienced some of that myself. Like, mm-hmm. I work for the local government, and the concept of government is control and mistrust, and there's a lot of extracting that goes on. Like, we're there to be used up, and then you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
and you don't have Christian culture, Christian attitudes in government, and so even the parameters that try to bring control to that are kind of faulty.
Yeah. Okay, we're down to a minute. Yes.
I was just wondering, how do you discern who or where the person will be most helped, thinking of it, someone in a crisis or needing help within the organization? How do you discern whether the organization is the best place to help them when it's time to look for help outside?
Outside the organization? I really think it takes some real discernment to know what is the real need. Like sometimes it looks like a financial need, for instance, but actually what it is a training need. Sometimes it looks like an emotional problem. It might be a physical one. And so it boils down to the discernment process of what is the real need. And then do you have it, or can you humbly say, we don't have it? We got to look for it.
How do you make basic training hard to prepare staff?
I don't know. Come to Beaver Lake Camp, do TDAs. I don't know. Team development stuff is hard. It's putting people in artificial difficult situations and seeing how they respond.
Which that wouldn't be our case.
Yeah. I think there's probably ways you can do some team development activities that are hard at Fresh Start. I think there would be ways. I don't know. Somebody with an imagination. Sheldon's good at that. Clifton's too. They know that stuff. Anybody? Are we done? Okay.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.